when Gen X women were the age of Gen Z women, the suicide rate was almost double now what it was for these women when they were young. So it's scary. And I've had at least three of my siblings attempt suicide. I had suicidal ideation on and off for numerous years. It was more episodic, tied to specific episodes versus just chronic. But I also was diagnosed with PTSD and anxiety and depression.
Hey, Joyful Warriors. Tiffany Justice here with Moms for Liberty, the Joyful Warrior podcast. And as you know, we seek to bring different people into your orbit that are talking about different things that are impacting you and your family in America today. And today I'm joined by an author, a journalist, Carrie Sheffield, and she's written a book called The Motorhome Prophecies that talks about her life growing up with her family, often some very bumpy times, but I think very apropos for where we find ourselves now about parents and kids and relationships and everything that's happening right now in America. So Carrie, welcome to the Joyful Warrior podcast. Very honored and excited to have you here to talk about your book, The Motorhome Prophecies. Can you talk a little bit about your life? Share with us what brought you to write this book.
Thank you, Tiffany. Thank you for having me and for all you're doing to fight for parents. It's really inspiring. The book, I've got a copy here. It's called Motorhome Prophecies, A Journey of Healing and Forgiveness. And I wrote the book right now at this time because we have a mental health crisis right now. We're having record depression rates, record suicide rates in America. And my family, sadly, we've struggled with a lot of these mental health problems stemming from my dad's abuse. And sadly, abuse he suffered when he was a child. And so the book is about stopping intergenerational trauma and stopping this mental health crisis that is just overwhelming our country. And just letting people know they don't have to be overwhelmed by anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And so tell us a little bit about your life growing up. Obviously, the name of the book is The Motorhome Prophecies. I'm imagining you spent a lot of time in a motorhome with your family. You had a number of siblings, right? What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, so I have seven biological siblings and my mom. So there were 10 people with my dad, all 10 of us in the motorhome. My father claims he's 86 now and has Alzheimer's, so he's not really active. But he, growing up, claimed that he was a prophet and that he was called by God to save America from destruction and that he would be president someday. And he made us perform music on street corners. He's a very credentialed classical guitarist. He studied with Andre Segovia, who was one of the world's greatest classical guitarists. He was knighted by the King of Spain. He has an asteroid named after him. He had hand-selected my father to be one of his proteges.
Wow.
And so my dad would perform this beautiful classical music on street corners and pass out brochures trying to convert people. He was eventually excommunicated from the Mormon Church, but my ancestors helped to found the official Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And eventually he, like I said, got all 10 of us were on the street corners eventually with him, proselytizing and trying to convert people. And it was a very transitory childhood. I ended up going to 17 public schools and homeschool. And, you know, it could have been done well. I think there's a right way to do homeschool and a wrong way. And we did the wrong way. And so I talk about just the fact that, you know, being poor is not a sin. There's nothing wrong with being poor. It can, you know, in fact, I was looking at the suicide rates globally around the world. And actually the bottom 20% of income has the lowest suicide rate in the world. So it shows that they're actually, you know, happier. So you don't need money to be happy. It really has to do more with the abuse and the way that we were physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally abused. And we were constantly told that we were full of Satan, that we were unworthy, that we would basically, I was told by my dad, if I left the cult, that I would be raped and murdered. And eventually two of my brothers developed schizophrenia, and it just, you know, it's a very toxic environment to constantly be told that, your father is righteous and that you are evil no matter what you do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your life and experiences and growing up. So currently right now, Moms for Liberty is reading the Abigail Schreier's new book, Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. And she takes a really interesting dive into therapy in general and asks the question, how did a nation of the most gently raised children become the most psychologically impaired, depressed, anxious, right? We have a nation of kids who are not doing well. And she looks to social media and phones, and there are definitely some truth in that. But it's also about parenting, about the way you grow up, about the way that you think about yourself. But you have been able to beat all odds. You were raised in a fairly toxic environment where I'm sure, you know, some of your siblings didn't fare as well as you. You look like you're doing incredibly well, healthy, strong, balanced. You found your way back to faith in your life. Maybe we could talk about that a little bit because, you know, in the public school system right now, Carrie, there's a lot of teaching that's antithetical to the teaching happening in the home. You know, the religious teachings of parents, the faith, the values, the traditions. What does that look like in the future of a child to have the government system fighting against the parents in the home? And you know, tell us a little bit about your experience with that.
The record depression rates for young people, it's just skyrocketing. I was reading about how when Gen X women were the age of Gen Z women, the suicide rate was almost double now. Wow. What it was for these women when they were young. So it's scary. And I've had at least three of my siblings attempt suicide. I had suicidal ideation on and off for numerous years. It was more episodic, tied to specific episodes versus just chronic. But I also was diagnosed with PTSD and anxiety and depression. And so mental health, I like to joke, like my family, we have almost every disorder, if you look at the DSM-5, I could probably give a lecture on all of them. But, and like I said, two of my brothers developed schizophrenia, and one of them, he groped me and tried to rape me. And so just the psychological damage of having siblings and then myself, it ultimately comes down to self-hatred. That's what suicidal ideation is, self-hatred. And for women are actually about three times more likely to consider suicide, to have suicide ideation than men. However, men are about three times more likely to actually successfully commit suicide. So that's what's so interesting, that this level of violence, men are more likely to actually perform it. And then also seeing with the school shootings, this is a psychological and spiritual problem. Just as an example, the first kind of tip of the spear when it started with Columbine, if you look at the profile of those boys, they were bullied, they were picked on, but they also had a deep spiritual darkness. They were embracing satanic ideas. So I do believe that there is a spiritual component. And when you look at the science, and this is a big topic that I am very much emphasizing with the book, there is so much science that proves that healthy, balanced spirituality and faith and religious community that is healthy. Again, I emphasize that word healthy because I was raised in a very unhealthy cult. And so I walked away from God for 12 years. I called myself an agnostic. I was hostile to the idea of God because I thought that either God didn't exist or didn't care about me, or was overtly trying to undermine me, or was just apathetic. You know, didn't care, hated the idea of God because I had been abused in the name of God. Well, when you're talking about these Columbine students, or you know, the kids in Abigail Schreier's book, there's so much evidence for healthy faith preventing suicide, for healthy faith being associated with lower depression rates. I'll quote a few studies. Harvard School of Public Health, they released a study after the big wave of COVID showing that women who go to church services or some type of religious service once a week are 68% less likely to die by suicide, drug overdose, or alcohol overdose. For men, it's 33% less likely. That's the Harvard School of Public Health. And then there's also the National Bureau of Economic Research, which is one of the most prestigious economic research firms up in Boston. and they're a feeder. A lot of their people go to work for the Federal Reserve. So one of the creme de la creme in terms of economic research, they found something very similar, that states that have higher religious participation have lower suicide rates.
So interesting. So you were sharing with me that the suicide rates are the highest they've ever been since 1941. I think you had said depression is the highest ever. But again, I want to go back to this teaching in the classroom, antithetical to the teaching in the home. Now, you were raised in what I'm sure your parents believed was a highly religious and spiritual way. You know, perhaps there would be those who would question that, right? But in their mind, they were raising their children with religion and in a spiritual way. Now, parents have the right to direct the upbringing of their children, their education, their medical care, their morality, their religion. Parents don't have the right to abuse their children. And there's a line there between, right, raising your children and abusing them. And I think we all can clearly see that, you know, there are times when abuse happens and we need to handle that. And we have laws in place to help to handle those things. But I'd love to talk to you a little bit about this idea of healthy religion and the role that it plays in a child's life and a family's life. Because you had shared psychologists are largely atheists. In fact, they have a very large percentage of them that are atheists. So when I'm looking at this idea of therapy and bad therapy, what Abigail's writing about in the book, and we're seeing this huge influx of mental health counselors coming into schools, right? And the schools becoming aggressive against the parents' religion, a teaching happening in the schools that is very much against the parents' wishes. In Montgomery County, Maryland, there was a judge that ruled on a case where parents, these are Jewish parents, Muslim parents, parents who were atheists, parents who were Christian, who came forward and said, listen, I feel like my child is being baptized into a new religion at school. I'm not comfortable with what you're teaching my child. It's directly antithetical to my religion. Now, that court, Carrie, said that it, in fact, was not a violation of the free religious exercise of the parents and the family for the child to be taught things that are directly antithetical to the religious teachings in the home. Let's talk about this for a second. How can parents raise children with a love for God and whatever their religion is and a healthy faith if the schools are actively working against them in that manner?
Wow. I had not heard about that case, and I hope they're appealing it because I don't know exactly what was being taught.
Yes.
But to me, that seems pretty straightforward, that something that is completely in direct opposition to the religious practice should be waived in terms of, well, I don't think it should be taught at all. I think some of these very divisive concepts should just be removed entirely. And then if the parents in their home want to teach something in either direction, again, as long as there's no abuse. The first part of your question on the abuse, I wrote an op-ed for The Federalist about a recent prison sentence for two women out in Utah. They were both sentenced to up to 30 years in prison for child abuse. And one of them was a very famous YouTube star named Ruby Frank. And they're both members of the LDS Church. And the judge said this was religious motivated abuse. Mm-hmm. And they were abusing Ruby's children in the name of God. And they were saying that their children were filled with Satan and that they needed to work hard labor. They were starved. The judge called it a concentration camp like conditions. Just horrific. And they only found out about it because the little boy ran to a neighbor, and I think he had tape like on his wrists, and just begged for help. But there were so many people along the way who didn't do anything, including the children's father. I don't know why he's not charged, but in any case, the fact that the court acknowledged this was religiously motivated abuse, my heart broke for these children, because my prayer for them is that they don't walk away from God. They don't confuse God's will with God's name used in vain here. There's a good analogy that I like, which is from music, which is that if you go to a concert and you hear Beethoven played badly, you don't blame Beethoven, you blame the musicians. And so when I'm thinking about faith and using God's name or God's will, I like to take guidance from Ronald Reagan, who said, I'm concerned when we always claim God is on our side. I think we should be pondering, am I on his side? So that's, I think, a first kind of good guiding principle when we're thinking about how are we integrating faith into what's happening in the home or how are you raising your children or what's happening in society. I think there's kind of a universal conscience that's universal across all faiths, from Christian to Muslim to Buddhist and, you know, all of the denominations, Islam, that generally the family values, the conscience, there are different applications, and this is not the time and place to get into all that. But I will say, as far as religious liberty for the families, I think that it's what you're doing and other families who are speaking out about faith and how, you know, the atheism within psychology and psychiatry, it's in direct opposition to the very scientifically backed, you know, evidence that God and faith and religious community heals your brain. That's how I, to answer your question, how did I break free? How did I get through it? It was through my faith and through therapy. I got prayer and therapy together. I think you need to do both. And so my goal is to challenge both, you know, Christians or very religious people. Sometimes they're skeptical of mental health treatment, partially because a lot of them are corrupt or completely out of touch with what actually works. But I also challenge that atheist academy of psychologists to say, why don't you actually look at what works, which is spirituality and faith and belief in God. It actually can literally rewire your brain, which is what happened with me. There's a really great psychologist that I recommend, and I talk about him in my book. His name is Kurt Thompson. He is a Christian, and he's an MD, and he has a background in neuroscience. And he's written multiple books. The one that helped change my rewiring was a book called Anatomy of the Soul. And it talks about the neuroplasticity of the brain and how we can rewire our brains. And that's really what's happening with the, as you mentioned, the technology addiction and the social media. Unfortunately, we've wired our brain in negative ways, but the positive good news is it can be done to rewire it. I have seen it in my life. The toxic, dark places that I've been, I'm not there anymore thanks to this rewiring.
So let's talk about that. So at 17, you leave, you choose freedom, you said. That must have been very scary for you as a 17-year-old. Or did you find it invigorating, the chance to build a new life on your own? I would still think it would be scary at 17.
Yeah. Well, so that was when he attacked me, and then I left when I was 18. Okay. So, but I was terrified. I really was, because my dad, you know, he raised his hand to the square and he said, I prophesy in the name of Jesus, you'll be raped and murdered if you leave. So when you have your own father pronouncing curses over you for a very normal life choice of going to college, and part of why he was that way was because I'm fifth in the birth order, but I was the first to leave. So I have four older brothers and the first girl. And so it's a lot easier to isolate one person who's the first person. And so he said, my blood changed. I was no longer his daughter. Mm-hmm. I was not allowed home for any Christmas or summer breaks during college. And I ended up taking that as fuel. It ended up being positive, but also negative in the sense that I had not thoroughly processed, and most importantly, I had not forgiven him for his abuse or thoroughly really unpacked it. And so I just, on a personal level. And so instead, I just threw myself into my professional work, and I ended up getting 5 internships before I graduated from college. Like I said, well, my roommates are going home to mama to cuddle their teddy bears in the summertime, and I'm going to go intern, you know? And so I interned at Newsweek magazine. I interned for Robert Novak, the longtime Washington Post columnist, interned for newspapers in North Carolina and Missouri and Utah, and just worked really hard and ended up getting a full scholarship to Harvard for a master's degree in public policy. So on paper, I say, you know, I have all these things with my resume I was proud of. I ended up later working in finance and Wall Street. I was the lead analyst on a $5 billion credit portfolio for the largest or the highest ranked bond rating agency, Moody's Investor Service. Also worked at Goldman Sachs. So checking all the boxes, Harvard, Goldman Sachs, like all the prestigious things, that was my resume. But the anti-resume side of me was just a wreck. And emotionally decimated, struggling with suicidal ideation, dating abusive, terrible, toxic men, including a hidden drug addict, a hidden alcoholic. Just my personal life was in shambles while my professional life was just taking off because I had not thoroughly understood the warfare inside my spirit and my mind.
And so did you find, now this is such an interesting thing. And for our moms, I'm sure, you know, they're listening and interested as well. So I have to ask, did you find that you were kind of drawn to some of these broken men? Was that something that, you know, here you're doing so spectacularly well, and yet you're dating some people that, you know, obviously probably weren't operating at the same caliber as you? I'm just so curious about what was that moment when you were like, this has got to change.
Yeah. I mean, I realized that I was sort of the perfect blend of both my parents in the toxic ways, that I was very ambitious and extroverted and accomplished like my dad on paper in career. But then I also was enabling and docile and just accepting super toxic behavior like my mom. And so it just became this dichotomy of like, why is this why am I allowing this to happen? And I think part of it is, I talk about in the book, there's a concept called highly sensitive people, HSP. And I know people use that word neurodivergent a lot, but hear me out. In this case, it's actually been proven with your brain scans that your amygdala and your insula are activated more strongly. It's not a disorder, so I'm not pathologizing it. But it is actually proven scientifically that people like myself, it's about 20, and it's also very common. It's about 20% of the people in the world. So 80% of people are not, 20% are, very common. And it's people who are very empathetic. So when someone's an empath, and most people who are HSP are introverted, only about 6%, according to all these multiple studies they've done, are extroverted. So that means there's only about 3.5% of the people in the world who are like me, which is an extroverted female, highly sensitive person who has my amygdala activated.
It's a lot. I'm sure that's, opening. It's like the world comes at you really big all the time, I would imagine.
Yeah. And what that means in practice is I absorb my environment. I think that's part of my biology of being the daughter of this world-class musician, where I can absorb, and I'm a musician as well. I'm not at his caliber, but I play violin for 3 churches and sing, worship. Wow. And, you know, I was in a nationally ranked orchestra when I was in high school, one of my 17 high schools. And I was the first chair, second violin, and, you know, did, you know, different honors and things for violin. So I've got that ability to really understand just the tonality and to absorb sound just through my wiring. And so that is part of, I think it's your part of your superpower, but it's also part of your kryptonite. So all of that to say is that I think that my empathy for toxic men is part of why I stayed with them, because I could feel their pain. I could feel their brokenness. And just like my mom, I wanted to fix that.
I'm sure that there are many women who are listening to you speak right now that can also see that in themselves at some point in their lives, perhaps. So thank you for sharing that with us. So Carrie, the last thing I really want to talk to you about, again, I'm going to go back to religion, because I think that there are many moms in Moms for Liberty. We have moms from all different faiths. And then some who don't practice religion at all. You know, lots of different people are parents, and we stand for parental rights. I don't have to agree with everything you do as a parent to respect your right to direct the upbringing of your child. Again, you can't abuse your kids, right? There's a line there. But when we're talking about religion, when you have a country, when you have a government system that is so working so hard to drive a wedge between the parent and the child. You know, if you've heard me on the podcast before speaking about Moms for Liberty, there is a wedge being driven between a parent and a child in our public schools. I've said before, the building of the Red Guard in America, and this idea of turning on everything traditional, everything normal, everything, you know, everything that would be, you know, again, tradition in your home and religion being one of those things. So you seem to have found such love and purpose in your faith as an adult who, you know, there'd be a lot of reasons for you to maybe stay away from religion, right? Or to not have it be something that you found that's so wonderful for you. Some advice for parents who are struggling with kids who are pushing back against them right now, especially in a world that's, you know, really encouraging them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, so the book, I tell the full story in Motor and Prophecies, but the short answer is that I tried everything else. I mean, not everything, but I tried a lot of other things besides God, and they kept failing me. And so to the young people and the parents of the young people, you know, I wrote the book as a letter to young people, a letter to my younger self. And I like to say it's like the movie Sliding Doors. It's an old movie with Gwyneth Paltrow, but she, in one scenario, it's like a choose your own adventure. One scenario, she catches the sliding door on the tube in London and is able to catch her boyfriend cheating on her. And then the other scenario in the movie, she misses the sliding door and she misses finding out that her boyfriend is cheating on her. So it's a divergence in the outcome of her life in both scenarios, and it's juxtaposed. It's a very well done movie. But my life is a life I spent a long time away from God. And I wish that I never had walked away from God. Not to say my life is certainly not perfect and never will be. But I know that as I've walked with God and have made that commitment, my life and my ability to conquer my mental illness has been infinitely strengthened. And so it's a free country. People can make their own choices. But I wrote the book as a warning to say, don't, as Cecil B. DeMille, the guy who wrote the movie, The Ten Commandments, he says, you know, the commandments cannot be broken. You can only break yourself on them. Mm. And so I think that's what's happening at a macro level, that our country is rejecting our foundation of Judeo-Christian heritage, and we're breaking ourselves on this. And we're trying all new things. We're thinking like all these newfangled philosophies and identities and all that's new, but there's nothing new under the sun. And it's basically creating chaos. It's creating a new atheism, which is, you know, nothing new. So that's something that in the TikTok age, I think it's important for parents to remember. None of this is actually new. Maybe the distribution model is different and new. Nothing's new. Go to the ancient sources of wisdom, and you'll get through this.
And then the last question I have for you is, I would imagine that there were different adults that your family interacted with at times that saw that there were some things that were going on with your family that were not fantastic. I have to imagine that, you know, your parents were not able to keep everything a secret from the world as you traveled through 17 different schools and lots of different friends and families and things. So if you're a mom or a dad, an adult in the world, and you see a child that somehow is being harmed in some way, because it does happen. What is the best way to handle that? Carrie, just some advice for our moms and dads and anyone listening about the best way to interact to try to help a child that they see might be in trouble.
Yeah, no, I do believe if the adults around us had been more proactive, that my two brothers would not have gotten schizophrenia. I do believe that. And I believe that most likely my siblings would not have attempted suicide, and lots of other things, that we would have had more successful marriages, and we have more animals and dogs than grandchildren in our home, in my family. And I think the idea that it's not my business, that is certainly what contributed to the violence in my life. So I think, yeah, you know, you don't have to meddle. And I think sometimes as conservatives, they shun. And it is true, the foster system, as Naomi Riley has pointed out, can be far worse. But I think if we had been taken to go to a relative's home, our lives would have been a lot better. The custody authorities actually did almost take us away when I was about four. But we were constantly moving all the time. So I think that, and now looking at my nieces and nephews, if I for one second thought they were being abused, I would immediately call the police. I absolutely would. And there are ways you can report without your identity being known. There are ways you can protect your privacy to protect yourself. But I think people need to search their conscience and realize if you can do something, you should, because there are just shattered futures that are going to unfold if you don't.
Thank you for sharing that. Carrie, it's been a pleasure to talk with you about your book, The Motorhome Prophecies. I hope that our moms go out and get this book and read it and share with their friends about some of your life journey and your journey back to happiness. And you have a beautiful, beautiful woman with a beautiful smile, and you're sharing your story. And I know it's going to change a lot of different people's lives and perspectives. So thank you for coming on the Joyful Warrior podcast. You are truly a joyful warrior. We will make you an honorary one today. Again, thank you for joining us. So The Motorhome Prophecies by Carrie Sheffield. Carrie, where can people follow you and get this book?
Thank you. Yeah, it's at most of the major retailers. It's on Amazon, Books a Million, Barnes and Noble. Your local bookstore, request it to your local bookstore. Also your local library, it to your local library. That would be great. Get some good, and it's for high school and above, I would say. So, but yeah, certainly request it. And I'm at Carrie Sheffield and would love to connect. And Tiffany, thank you for your bravery.
Thank you, Carrie, for yours, honestly. And our moms will be excited to be able to read and learn with you. So at Carrie Sheffield on Twitter, follow Carrie, The Motorhome Prophecies out now. Go and get your copy. Carrie, I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You as well.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time on the Joyful Warrior podcast.